Zayde Torah Manchta Yud Beis Tammuz Tafshnei Vav Rebbe Fol Katz.
Good morning. Nice to see you again. I wanted to mention some points on the never-ending subject of Shabbos. And we know that Shabbos is not just a mitzvah; it's a matana as well. It's called a matana. And we know that Shabbos, as far as mitzvahs is concerned, has a very special status. In Drush, they say the vote that more than Klal Yisrael have kept the Shabbos, Shabbos has kept Klal Yisrael. And the Chofetz Chaim had a story where he was speaking to a shopkeeper who was a Mechalel Shabbos, and he said to him, "You know that when a shop has a sign on the door, then you know that it's open for business. But if the sign is taken down, then it's the bailiffs have been and it's closed. So as long as Klal Yisrael keep the Shabbos, then the shop's open for business. But once you don't keep Shabbos, then the shop's closed. Klal Yisrael have lost something. You've abandoned it." And that's reflected in the halacha as well. Because when a person is given up on Shabbos, then it's considered a mumah l'chol ha'Torah kula. Which is not the case by every other mitzvah. So you see that there's a certain something about Shabbos that is very unique. And even the Torah says about the mitzvah of Shabbos, the chiyuv of Shabbos, two words that are reserved for Shabbos that are not written by most other mitzvahs. And those two words, the first of those words is Kodesh, Kadesh, Vayikadesh Oysoi. Shabbos is Kodesh. What does Kodesh mean? Kedusha. What does it mean to be holy? Such a word so easy to say and so lacking in clear definition. What does Kedusha actually mean? You are Kodesh, Kedosh until you should become Kodesh. Shabbos is Kodesh. What does it mean to be holy? So Rav Hirsch explains, Kedusha means to have no resistance to good. To have no resistance to doing good. As long as a person struggles to do good, even if they do the good, that's not yet so kodosh. It's good, better than doing bad. But kedusha means where goodness becomes a natural part of the person and there's no more resistance. That's what kedusha means. You're totally devoted, not devoted, but unresisting to goodness. And Shabbos has in it the ability for those who keep it to make them such that they have no resistance to doing good. They become so part of goodness, of what the Torah wants, of what Hashem wants, that it becomes part of them. They become Kodosh. So Shabbos has the ability to inspire, to develop Kedusha in a person. What's the other word? Bracha. Borech, vayivorech. Hashem gave... Shabbos has the ability to give bracha. What does that mean? What is bracha? Everybody runs around the world looking for brachas and spends vast sums of money on it as well. On all sorts of schemes.
I never.
Yeah, you're an exception. I'm not saying anything about those schemes. But bracha, people want bracha. What does bracha mean? What are we asking for bracha? Or when you give a bracha, what are you getting? What are you wishing when you give someone a bracha? Borech means permanence. Like you find, Rav Hirsch says, in Bri'as Olam, then Hashem said to the animals, "Vayivorech Lo'isam Elokim." He gave them a bracha. I don't know. Do you give cows brachas? Cows don't ask for brachas. So what did Hashem give them? And the Ramban says, "Borech means a permanence. He established these creatures as a permanent part of the world. They are enduring in the world." And therefore, when you wish somebody a brocha, you give them a brocha, you hope, you daven, that they should have a permanence in whatever it is. Parnosa, a brocha for parnosa, it should come as a not just as a temporary thing, but it should be permanent. So Shabbos is brocha. It means that people who are connected to Shabbos, they have eternity. They have the ability, it gives them something that... Continuity, yes, that's a good word, thank you. And it gives them permanence. What does it mean? What is this of Shabbos? What does it mean?
You're going around the pasuk by Vayivorech Malakim every time, every day.
It doesn't say that every day. It says it by the animals.
By animals.
Yeah.
A power to continue,
yes,
to produce.
That's right. That they will always
plants,
be.
Plants, notices.
Sorry?
Plants, I think
it also. Could be. We can look into it. Ayn Sham. Okay. I'd like to discuss this in different ways, and we'll talk about it in one way, and then we'll come back to the main subject. You notice that the Rishonim quite often, they mention the physical benefits of keeping mitzvahs. So the Ramban, for example, in Macholas Asuras, he gives the pshat, I think it's the Ramban or the Rambam, they say how Macholas Asuras, that they're not good, physically good for a person, and the diet of the Torah is healthy, and so on and so forth. You find that the Rishonim do give such reasons. That doesn't mean that this is the reason, that this is it. But it means that when you are keeping the mitzvahs, we should be grateful for this too. We should also appreciate this benefit of it, and it's not considered an insult to the Torah to see the physical benefits that we gain from mitzvahs. So let's do the same for Shabbos and appreciate the plain physical benefit of stopping for a day. Because the world just carries on, and the world goes on and on and on. And when do people actually ever stop? It's a Mishunadika thing. People do not stop. And how blessed we are that we have an enforced rest. And if you keep Shabbos properly, you have a rest in your mind as well. You don't even think about business. You leave it all alone. What a brocha. Isn't that a beautiful thing, a marvelous thing? And to spend a moment to appreciate the benefit of that, just the physical benefit, is also part of the Torah. It's also part of appreciating what Shabbos is. You know, the founding fathers of the American Constitution wrote some wise things in that document. Once upon a time, people had a bit of depth to them. And so when they gave the rationale for their independence, it wasn't a knee-jerk reaction to some vague notions of superiority, but they had a reason for it. And they wrote that it's self-evident, it's a beautiful document, at least the first half of it is. And here's the key, the beautiful line, one of the most famous lines is, that we hold it to be self-evident that there are certain inalienable rights to mankind. There are certain things that all human beings have a right to that are, they don't need to explain. You don't need to explain why you are justified in asking for this. And they are the right of liberty and something else, I forget it. Sorry? What is it?
Fraternity
and? The last one is? Pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of happiness. The right to pursue happiness.
Statue of Liberty.
Sorry?
Statue of Liberty.
Ayn Sham. The pursuit of happiness as a right to in life is written into the document. You're entitled to pursue happiness. And you'd wondered why, therefore, there are so many unhappy people. If that was their objective in pursuing happiness, why have they not achieved it? They're no happier in America than anywhere else, I don't think. So why have they not achieved it? And it seems to me the answer is in the document itself, because it's all about the pursuit of happiness. When do you stop pursuing it and actually start being it? And it's like kovod, kol aberech achar kovod, kovod runs away from you. If you chase after it, you never get it. It's like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. If you're looking for it, you won't find it. When you stop chasing after it, and you start trying to be it, There you are, you might actually be it. And that's where it is for Shabbos. All week a person is chasing after, pursuing happiness. You want to have things, you've got to do this and achieve things. When do you stop to be happy? To absorb all of those things? And just to appreciate that physical benefit of Shabbos is not beneath the gedulah of Shabbos. But it doesn't even touch Shabbos. I'd like to share a thought before we move into the main subject, and that is as follows. You know how the language that people use, reveals a vast amount about the mindset and the culture of that language? I was talking about this on Shabbos to somebody who sometimes comes to the shir, and he said to me, you know how English, I think, according to him, is the only language where the word for I is one capital letter. It's a capital letter. Talk about the British being snobs. Whoops. Or haughty. Okay? That reveals something. It's a capital letter. I said, you know, in other languages, the word for I is ich. Because people who are full of I are ich. Ooh. Not so good. But it reveals something. For example, I'll give you an example that Zarev Hirsch says. You know that in the Torah, what is the word for a master? An odin. Yes. What else is the word odin used for in the Torah? Yes, the sockets. The sockets that supported the Mishkan. What does that tell us about the mindset of the Torah and how the Torah views mastery? Whereas in English and in other languages, a lord, you know, what does lord mean? You lord yourself over someone. You are there to impose yourself on other people, to own them, to master them. Master means to control something. An odin is the supporter of other things. So you as the master are not there for your benefit. You're there to take care of all of them. A very, very a different concept. So in the Torah, there is no such thing for an object, a thing. There's no word for it. Did you know that? There's no word for things. In place of that, dova doesn't mean thing. We have no word for it, so we use the word dova, a word. But there is no word for it. In fact, in the Torah, there is no word for having. I have. The closest you get to it is yesh li. To me, there is. It's shaykh to me. It's, I have a connection to this thing.
Not mine.
Yeah, I have a shaykhus to it. So, therefore, you see that in the Torah's mind, objects and things are not the ikkah. They're not relevant. They don't define a person. They're not what a person needs to be focusing on. To Hashem, the reality is not in things. It's in something else. And you find Kedusha. Where is Kedusha first mentioned in the Torah? What is the first thing that is Kodosh? Sorry?
Mishka.
No. Shabbos. Time. Time is the first thing that becomes holy, that becomes a special thing in Hashem's eyes. What's the next thing that becomes Kodosh? Man, person, is Kodosh. And only after that, as a bidyevet even, the Mishkan became Kodesh. And according to most Mefarshim, or at least a number of Mefarshim, the Mishkan was a bidyevet after the Egel. Before the Egel, it would have been v'shachanti b'soicham, literally b'soicham, without the need of objects. Objects becoming holy is a big bidyevet. So to Hashem, things don't matter, having doesn't matter, but being does. And being and becoming something is done in time, not in space. Is done within life, not in having things. And that's the first greatness of Shabbos. Because Shabbos tells a person to stop having things. Forget about things. It's not about objects and things. It's about being and living and becoming something. And experiencing, living in time rather than in space, than in objects. And that's a touch of Kedusha of Shabbos. And the reality is that the world is just the opposite. In the world, everything is about having stuff. How much you have. Who makes it? Who are the famous people? The people who have lots of money. No matter how they got the money. Nobody asks those questions. But having stuff. Even having, as in I have a talent. Some people sing. It's very nice. Who's a hero? Someone who can sing. Now, he didn't become that. It's not something he became. He has it. Some people just have it. They have it. It's born with them, usually. So there is...
You say that in the world concept, there is no such thing as Kodosh in a time span. Only by you Jews is there such a thing as Kodosh in a time span of Shabbos. That yes. We're trying to say
Time. Time and being.
That's the first time it's mentioned, Kodosh by
Kodosh time, in the Torah.
By Shabbos.
Shabbos. By Ikadosh, I say.
Ikadosh.
First time? First time, because it's about being, not having things. And that's an important thing. Okay. Fine. Let's move on a little bit. So let's try and touch a bit about what the greatness of Shabbos is. What is it? We find Shabbos mentioned twice in the Torah. The first time in Brias Olam, Maaseh Bereishis. The next time Shabbos is mentioned in a big way is in Parshas Beshalach, in connection with the Mon. And although Shabbos is mentioned in connection as in the Aseres Hadibros, it's mentioned in connection with the Mishkan, it's mentioned in other respects as well, as almost as a side note, but in a big way, Shabbos is mentioned twice in full. One is in Brias Olam, and the other is in with the Mon. And we'd like to investigate both of them a little bit and see what the Kedusha in both of them is, what's the Brocha, and what does Shabbos, what does it do for us? So Shabbos and Brias Olam, the Mefarshim, the Malbim says, Rav Hirsch says, they both make the following point, that the key word in Maaseh Bereishis is Vayechulu. They came to completion. They came to their completion. Why is that so important? And what does that tell us about Shabbos? The debate about the origins of the world has been going on a lot long, for as long as the world itself. Forever and ever, people have debated whether the Olam is Kadmon, it always existed, it developed itself somehow, or there was a Boire who imposed his will on it. And the Torah very clearly says, Vayechulu. If you look at the world, what you see is not because it happened to come this way, but because someone willed it this way. It is complete. It came to its state. What's the significance of that? And the Malbim says that if you look at the world, you find the world is at rest. The natural world is at rest. Now, here's a big problem for the people who believe that the world evolved by itself in a biological way. It's a big problem, that. Because at any point in the past, in all the billions of years, if you were to stop the clock and look at the world, you would see things that are in a stage of development. So-called fish turning into birds and so on, you know, half-wit wings sort of developing and so on and so forth, as they say. All things that are constantly developing into higher forms, different forms.
Darwin's theory.
The fair theory of evolution. But if you stop the clock now on the world, you don't see that at all. There's nothing in a state of change at all. There isn't. It's not so. The world is in a state of Shabbos, in a state of rest.
Things are developing all the time. I don't understand what you mean.
There's no things that are changing fundamentally from one thing to another.
Because we have a long lifespan.
At any point in those billions of years, if you stopped the clock, you would have seen those things already in the stage. You'd have seen things half developed. There was no point at which things were not developing.
Yeah, but his theory is not half developed. His theory is changed.
Einstein. Yeah, it's all changed. Everything's changed, but the basic idea is that things do develop. So the kasha is, why are they still not developing? Why are we? We'd all love to fly. Wouldn't it save a lot on fuel and petrol and fare air tickets if we could all grow wings and fly? So why don't we do that? Sorry? Yes. There you go. So the fact that the world is in a state of rest says more about the origins of the world than the creation itself does. The fact that the world isn't developing and the physical world is static does more to demonstrate the presence of a Boire than the actual Bria itself does. Technology and these things are not biological evolutions. They're not in natural developments. They're human developments.
He's talking about
therefore, when Shabbos comes, for the very first time, are you forced to face up to the presence of a boire, to the presence of Hashem. So you stand on Shabbos, and you are now in the presence of the will of the Creator. Dovar Rishon. Number one. Okay, let's move onwards a little bit, and let's find out what's so significant about the Mon. What is it? What's the significance over there? What is it all about? And we come to the Parasha of the Mon. And the Parasha of the Mon is introduced in a very unusual way. They had no food. They came out of Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yam Suf, and all of that. They had no food, and they're very worried. Hunger is very bad, which, Baruch Hashem, most people don't know about. Hunger is a terrible thing. Hashem said to Moshe, I'm going to give you bread, food. People will go out and they'll have to gather dvar yom b'yom every single day. They're going to have to go collect their food. I need to test them to see whether they'll follow my Torah or not. This last bit of the pasuk is a bit of a puzzle. What does it mean? I'm going to test them whether they'll follow my mitzvahs. When Hashem gave them a mitzvah of pidgin haben, I want you to redeem the first one. It doesn't say, leman anasenu, if you'll do my mitzvahs. When he gave them the mitzvah of tefillin, leman anasenu hayelech b'sayrosi, it doesn't say. But this, it says, leman anasenu. What does it mean? Does it mean, I'll see if they do this? And Rav Hirsch says, it means that to see whether they can follow this mitzvah is a test whether I should bother giving them the rest of the Torah or not. If they can follow this mitzvah, then there's a point in giving them the Torah. Otherwise, there's no point. So in other words, the Mon was a test whether Klal Yisrael are fit and proper to receive the Torah. This was before Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah. And whether they can keep to this is a sign, a test, whether they'll be able to have the Torah or not. Because if they can keep it, it's worth giving them a Torah. Otherwise, it's not worth the bother. They won't be able to keep the Torah if they can't keep this. So what does that mean? How does that work? What's the meaning of that? And Rav Hirsch says the following thing. He says that of all the tests that a person has to undergo in life, there is not one that has the ability to completely push a person away from the will of Hashem. There isn't one. Everything a person is capable of overcoming and living and overcoming his challenges. Besides one. There is one that is so powerful that if a person is unable to deal with this properly and effectively, then they will not be able to keep the Torah. You cannot keep the Torah if you don't know how to deal with this. And that is the search for Parnasa. Because where people are hungry, where people are starving, where people don't know where their next meal is coming from, where the parnasa is coming from, they're worried for themselves, they're worried for their families, they're worried for their future, then there is nothing that stands in the way of that. There's nothing that stops a person achieving what they need to do to achieve to feed their families, until Ratzicha itself. As the Mishnah says, in the search for parnasa, in the search for looking after our families and our future, there is no good thing that stands in the way. Horaya. So, Klal Yisrael had seen every nest, hadn't they? Makkas, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf. And they'd seen the waters, Mora, and other things in the Midbar so far. And these people came. And what was unique about these people was that until this point, they'd never had to earn a parnasa for themselves. Because they'd been slaves. And a slave is fed, a slave is given his food. They've never had this. So Hashem brought these people, idealistic people, vayaminu b'Hashem. There's no doubt that these people had experienced plenty of Hashem. And they came to the Midbar, and Hashem said, let me show you what the worry of Parnasa can do to the most idealistic person. And he brought them to the Midbar, and for a couple of days there was no food. And all of their knowledge, all of their good intentions, all of everything is gone. And they're fighting with Moshe, and we want to go back to Mitzrayim straight away. And that's the reality. That's the reality of this struggle which people have for Parnasa, and it's a worldwide phenomenon. Do you know that the words in Lashon HaKodesh are related to each other? So find me two words that are related to do with Parnasa and fighting and struggle. Didn't take you long. Very good. Lechem and milchama. Because the greatest source of strife and struggle between people and between nations is all about parnassah, it's about resources, it's about securing the future. And what hasn't been done in to justify this? In terms of countries, what has the need of oil ever done to the world? What have Western countries in the need of oil agreed to and allowed to happen and given into because they need that oil? They need it. How many wars have been about oil? Yeah. How many lives have been lost? Yes. Yeah. And if America would have had 30, 40 years ago the oil they have now in America, how would the world look like a different place? Resources, securing our future, is something that dominates not just countries, but people as well.
Water as well.
Water, everything, resources, living. And therefore Hashem said to Klal Yisrael, if you want to keep my Torah, you have to learn how to handle this. And what's the key? What's the what's the mystery here? The mystery is this, that as much as you're concerned about your future and your parnasa, Hashem's at least as concerned as you are, and even more so. And as much as you think it's your business, it's even more so Hashem's own business to provide parnasa for people. And as much as you take care of it, Hashem also, every person, Hashem has his eye on them. And Hashem is concerned for them. And he wants to give them their parnasa. And he wants to look after them. And therefore, Hashem wants people to know that that which you go to earn parnasa, and all the actions you take in securing your future, they have to be done in accordance with the will of Hashem. And it's a duty, not a right, as Rav Hirsch says, to use those words. Earning a parnasa is your obligation, not your right. It's something that you do like any other mitzvah in the Torah. You do it b'shutfus with Hashem, and as long as a person does the will of Hashem in that, he has every right to say to Hashem that you are responsible for the parnasa. It's your responsibility. Tomorrow is Hashem's. Hashem worried about me for today, he'll worry about me tomorrow. Next year, all definitely Hashem's. And a person who cannot give up the worry about tomorrow will soon cannot give up the worry about next year, in 10 years' time as well. And therefore the first introduction to keeping Torah, to the preservation of the Torah, is a person has to be able to give parnasa and the whole worry of it to Hashem, and that enables a person to live within the will of Hashem as they go forward. As they move forward and they take actions, they live with the will of Hashem in their hands. And therefore that's the importance of Devar Yoyim B'Yoyimai. A person has to be able to live for today. A person has to have the confidence in Hashem. And that's why Chazal say, Lo nitna Torah ela lo'ich lehamon. Torah was given for people who can eat mon. Mon as in, it's Hashem's problem. It's really Hashem's problem. Ultimately, it's Hashem's business, and he provided for us up to now. We didn't die from starvation. It's his business also. So long as we do within the will of Hashem, we have that right for him to turn to him to ask for that. Tell you a little story my father told me. An anecdote. It's a beautiful anecdote. He told me just recently, and I won't mention the names of the people, although they are probably known around, but I'll say it. There was a businessman who lived in Stamford Hill, and he had a business where he was the only person in that field for many, many, many years. And then someone came along and decided to do the same, to open up. Problem?
It's a near each other.
Never mind, not the halacha.
Oh, no.
Not the halacha, is it a problem now?
Oh, yeah.
What's going to happen? My business. It's my business. And people face these struggles all the time, don't they? In one way or another, people face these struggles. Competition, and so on. So this gentleman phoned up the new competitor, and he wished him atzlocha, and he offered to help him out and give him advice, and so on and so forth. So the man was astonished. Why are you doing this to me? I'm your competitor. He said, you might be able to take away my customers, but you cannot take away my parnasa. That's a Shabbos yid. That's a yid who lives with Shabbos. That parnasa, when we live within Hashem's will, it's up to Hashem. It's his. It's not ours to worry about the future. Rabbi Victor Miller used to say, Barov Zantonu, he lived through the Great Depression. And he said, Barov Zantonu, even in famine we survived, didn't we? We survived, we're here. It was very difficult, we survived. So sometimes it's a bit tighter, sometimes it's a bit more, sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's the way it is. But the person has to be able to live within the will of Hashem. And therefore Hashem says, L'man anasenu hayelech b'sayrosi. If a person is able to have that confidence in me, then I know that they'll be able to keep my Torah, no matter what those situations are, no matter what comes at them. Let's look at the word Shabbos. What does Shabbos mean? What does Shabbos mean? It means to rest. So you stop. So somebody stops it. Why do you stop? You stop because you're not doing anything. Shabbos means much more than that. So Rav Hirsch says that, as you know, that words in Lashon HaKodesh are related, but you find in the Rishonim that letters that are pronounced with the same part of the mouth, they're related as well. So Shabbos is related to Shofat. Shabbos, Shofat, to judge something. Okay? So Shabbos doesn't just mean to rest because I'm not doing anything now. It's a day off, so I'm not doing anything. Shofat means to put everything in its place. Everything has a place, and the judge puts things in their place. So Shabbos means not just I've stopped and I'm resting, but it means the reason I'm stopping is because everything is in its right place. Which means that when a person comes to Shabbos and they've lived their week with the will of Hashem, according to the halacha, then whatever there is what Hashem wanted it to be. That's what Hashem wanted. You're not stopping because you're not doing anything. You're stopping because it is where it's supposed to be now. And as long as a person has lived their week within the will of Hashem, then when Shabbos comes, that's what Hashem wanted it to be. It's not just inactivity. It's finished because it's completed. Because it's come to where Hashem wants it. Now, all of this is very nice, but then a person might as well say, well, why do I have to bother? Why should I bother? It's all up to Hashem. I'm keeping the will of Hashem. And you find an interesting thing in the Mon. What do you find in the Mon? You find that they went out and they collected, and whatever they collected was the right amount. They came home, it was right, for what they were supposed to have. It's a puzzle. And yet it seems that they were supposed to try and get the right amount. You're supposed to go out, oymel agul goyles, get the right amount, and then even if they took less or more, it came the right amount. So why didn't they just go out with a little teaspoonful and come home, and it would come the right amount? Why not? It's all the same. It comes to the right thing. So Rav Hirsch says, you see from here that Hashem wants people to try. He wants you to try. And I say more, I'd like to add on to that. You know that there are different forms of tefillah. There are forms of tefillah. There's tefillah that we daven with our mouth. Sometimes a person doesn't even say words. They moan and groan. That can sometimes, also, it's also a form of tefillah. But there are forms of tefillah that we do with actions. Like, for example, we bang our rovers. That's a tefillah. It's a tefillah with an action. There are others. The Nevi'im used to do it a lot. They used to do things, actions, as a tefillah. And work, going to try, is a tefillah. Hishtaglus is a form of tefillah. And therefore, if a person makes a half-hearted tefillah, maybe they get a half-hearted response. When a person says a whole-hearted tefillah, they can ask for a whole-hearted response. And therefore we see that Hashem says, I don't want you to be lazy. I don't want you to be over. I don't want you to spend too much on it. Don't make your whole life into work and into parnosa. Don't try and gather too much because this is what you need. But don't be lazy. Don't sit at home and don't be... we need energy and people to get up and go and work for themselves. But we don't want too much either. And therefore, the Mon says to people that the worry, the burden belongs to Hashem. And that allows you to keep within the will of Hashem. Chesed. Chesed. Have you heard of chesed in the business place? Chesed? In the corporate world, is there such a concept? Only when it serves for PR. When you can get your name and your company logo on a charity so it gives exposure. Otherwise, chesed. Mishpat, what trick do we not try on people to take advantage where we have it? All these things, these concepts don't exist. They don't exist where it's me against you. But it's not me against you, it's Hashem. And we're doing what we're supposed to do. We're doing our obligation. We're working hard because Hashem says we should. Now you have a right. Now you have the ability to do chesed, one after the other. And finally we find that things that were left over went mouldy. Things that were left over. What's the word for left over? Hoysir. There's two words. There's hish'ir and there's hoysir. What's the difference between hish'ir and hoysir? Well, hish'ir is things that are naturally left over. I eat and they're natural leftovers. Hoysir, yeser means to stretch something very tight. So the string on a bow, because it's very tightly stretched and it's taut and you stretch it even further. Something that's exceptionally stretched, that's a yeser. That's why it's a rope, you pull it very tight. So therefore, anyone who was stingy, as in very stingy for tomorrow. I'm not eating today because I have to keep for tomorrow. The stinginess, the miserliness, Hashem didn't ask us for either. That which a person naturally leaves over and naturally has around, that's wonderful. A person is fine with that. But yes, sir, hoisir, to be stingy for the future, that Hashem doesn't want of us. He wants us to live, to enjoy it, to work for it, not to worry too much about it, to come to Shabbos having kept the will of Hashem and having kept the Torah, and then that burden becomes his. And that's the Kedusha and the Brocha of Shabbos. Brocha, the preservation of Klal Yisrael, as people who are able to keep the Torah, comes from Shabbos, from people who are able to give this burden to Hashem. And that's the Kedusha of Shabbos, because when a person is able to keep the Torah and keep it properly, they build up that lack of resistance to Kedusha. With time, they become Kedoshim. And there's partly the Skula of Shabbos, and even that is just the beginning of it.
Very strong point. Every sticker could be made. It's such a strong point. You took yeah. The Misr, the whole Muslim tradition, Misr Shmuel. It's very poor, very indicated. The Mon was also, they didn't collect one day.